asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Benji Hire. 16 migrants have been found alive in a refrigerated lorry on a ferry heading to Ireland. The group of men, thought to be between 20 and 40 years old, were heard banging on the walls of the trailer. The ferry left northern France, heading for County Wexford in southeast Ireland. The men are reported to be in good health. Prince Andrew has asked his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, for permission to step back from royal duties. His links to sex offender Jeffrey Epstein have come under increased scrutiny. And after an interview with the BBC, the Duke of York believed that the situation had become a major disruption to the royal family. Our UK correspondent Stuart Smith reports.
Following discussions with the Queen and Prince Charles, Prince Andrew has chosen to withdraw from royal duties for the foreseeable future. This means he won't be carrying out public engagements, but might still be seen at royal family events, such as Remembrance Day. In a statement, he said he continues to regret his ill-judged association with Jeffrey Epstein and deeply sympathises with anyone who has been affected and wants some form of closure. He added he was willing to help any appropriate law enforcement agency with their investigations, if required. Companies he had links with, such as BT, Barclays and KPMG, have distanced themselves from the Duke, as well as many universities and charities.
A prominent activist and former Somali diplomat has been shot dead in the capital Mogadishu. Almas Elwan was on her way to the airport at the time of the incident. Isabel Nakira reports from Kampala.
The vehicle that Almas Elwan was travelling in was ripped through with bullets before she was killed. It's still unclear why she was killed. Almas was actively involved in various peace initiatives in Somalia. She was a former diplomat, serving at the Somali embassy in Kenya between 2016 and 2017. Many people have expressed shock at the death of Almas. There's been many messages of condolences to the family on social media.
And the Indian government has given its approval for the Food Ministry to import 120,000 tons of onions into the country, as Sarita Mukherjee explains from New Delhi.
The cost of onions, a key kitchen ingredient in India, jumped to 60 Indian rupees or around 80 cents a kilogram. A year ago, the staple vegetable was priced at 22 rupees, which is around 30 cents per kilogram. The decision to import 120,000 tons of onions was taken to increase the supply and in turn reduce the steep price hike. Local reports state that there has been a 26% fall in the harvest of onions in India this year. Other than relaxing import regulations, the Indian government has banned exports and the hoarding of onion stocks to meet demand in the market.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSA.
Thank you very much, Benji. How are you doing, by the way? 21, is it the 21? It's the 21st. It's the 21st of November 2019. My name is Richie Allen. Great to be back with you after a couple of, well, unintended days off. We're back. We're up and running. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting on multiple platforms, and it is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe, I tells you. Sign me.
You junkies bastard, yeah. You junkies bastard, yeah.
Right and all, absolutely right. Welcome to the programme.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Got a terrific program lined up for you today. I'll be joined in the second hour of the program by Charisse Burchett. Now, I've known Charisse on social media for a number of years. She's a mother and an activist. I think it's fair to call her an activist. And I've never known anybody in all the years I've done this program to be so mercilessly trolled on social media because, as far as I can see, she asks questions about the safety of certain vaccines and their efficacy. She's an ordinary woman as much as I'm an ordinary man, and yet she puts up with stuff on social media. Well, it's a rare thing. Well, I want to dig down into that, so Charisse joins the program in the second hour. Before that, the host of the politics show, Tony Gosling, joins us live, former BBC journalist. Tony is going to run the rule over Prince Andrew and lots more besides. He joins the program in about 20 minutes' time. As usual, you can tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. There's nowt like it. I look forward to hearing from you today. Yeah. Enough of that music, I heard you cry. I'm chipper because I think, for the time being anyway, the technical problem that put paid to the streaming of the radio show, well, I think we've sorted it. There's a long story there as well, but I'm not going to get into it today because I can't. There is a long story. Got to give credit to Tony Gosling, if you get where I'm going with that. Anyway, let's have a look through the headlines. The Labour Manifesto was published today. If you're listening to the programme overseas, you will know that the UK will go to the polls on December 12th, the general election, the third one in 4 years. That's right. Labour unveiled its manifesto today. Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of, well, the opposition in the last parliament, launched it with his former shadow cabinet. They promised to transform the UK and to renationalise the rail, the mail, the water and energy. He said a green transformation of the economy would take place under Labour, and he wanted to get to a net zero carbon system by the 2030s. He said it's a radical platform, but one that means real change. Here is Jeremy Corbyn, the would-be Prime Minister, today. Have a listen.
I accept the hostility of the bad bosses paying poverty pay, because we will give Britain a pay rise, starting with a real living wage of at least £10 an hour, including for young workers. That's real change. I accept the implacable opposition of the dodgy landlords, because we will build 1 million homes, empower tenants and control rents. That is real change. I accept the hostility of the big polluters, because we will make sure they pay their fair share of the costs of their destruction and create 1 million climate jobs and build the healthy green economy of the future. That is real change. I accept the fierce opposition of the giant healthcare corporations, because we will stop them sucking profits out of our National Health Service. That is real change.
I'll wind it up, man.
I accept the hostility of the privatised utilities companies, because we will stop their great rip-off by bringing rail, mail,
yes,
water,
yes,
and energy into public ownership.
Yes.
And running them for the people. That is real change.
Real change. I think I saw John Malkovich in the audience with a gun pointed at his head. Jeremy Corbyn there, he talked about the hostility coming from lots of different quarters, but he didn't mention the hostility coming from Rachel Riley. Rachel Riley. Before we talk about Rachel Riley, the Prime Minister, the incumbent, Boris Johnson, I won't play, there's no need to hear from him today, but he said these plans will ruin us all. They'll destroy what's left of the economy, said Johnson. That's pretty much what he said. Now, the top trend on Twitter today is Rachel Riley. I spoke of this on the nonsensical newspaper review earlier on. Rachel Riley, co-presenter, I'm not sure, but she's on Countdown doing the sums and fetching the letters. Fetching the letters. Now, she's been criticised for attacking Jeremy Corbyn. And she doesn't like Corbyn. She believes that he's anti-Semitic. She believes he is a racist. And she shared an edited photo of Corbyn in which an anti-apartheid message being carried by him was removed. And she replaced it with another message, which was less than flattering to Mr. Corbyn. So she posted a selfie showing herself wearing a T-shirt featuring an image of Jeremy Corbyn being led away by the police during an anti-apartheid rally back in 1984. Now, in that genuine picture, Corbyn is wearing an anti-apartheid message, but she changed it and put a sign in Corbyn's arms in her edited picture that says Jeremy Corbyn is a racist endeavour. And there's been murders on social media over this. Corbyn's supporters up in arms demanding that Rachel Riley be fired for having the temerity to edit that 1984 picture of him being led away by the police. So what did she say about it? Well, Riley said, I didn't feel comfortable knowing that my workplace was to be full of racists tonight. She works at Media City in Salford, just around the corner from where the Richie Allen Show was broadcast. Right? And she wasn't too happy that outside the studios the other evening were lots of Corbyn fans. They must be racists, according to Rachel Riley, because they support Corbyn. Let me just tell you this. If you've been listening to this programme long enough and you find yourself demanding that Rachel Riley is fired from her job because she has an opinion that you don't like, you need to feck off. You need to feck right off and close the door behind you. Have you learned nothing? Why should Channel 4 fire Rachel Riley? I find Rachel Riley to be a bit of an idiot. Well, a lot more than a bit of an idiot. But she's entitled to her opinion. Jeremy Corbyn is the leader of a national political party. He has been a very outspoken critic of Israel for many years. Does that make him racist? Well, no, because Jews are not a race. Does it make him a bigot? I'm not sure. I don't think so. But she's Jewish. And she has interpreted the things he has said throughout his career to be racist. And she's entitled to do that. Like it or lump it. What's wrong with you? Demanding that people are fired because you are offended by something they have said. You cretin. You moron. You dangerous idiot. What happens when it's you? Eh? What happens when it's you? When somebody decides that you're no longer part of the company plans because you've shared opinions on social media about things. Things you might have a very strong opinion about. Right? Right, so whatever you think of Rachel Riley, defend to the fucking death her right to think whatever she wants about Jeremy Corbyn. And get over yourself, you muppet, if you want her fired. You cretin. It's none of Channel 4's business what she does. She's not a journalist. She doesn't work in their news teams. She's a woman who works on a quiz show. And she's entitled to think what she wants, and she's entitled to make a stupid fucking meme if she wants. And if you find yourself demanding that her career is ripped out from underneath her and that she's exiled, you're sick. Sick you are, and you need to grow up. All right? All right. That's you told. Easy for me to be the tough guy here in the studio, eh? Right? I'll tell you. I'll give it to you. But I am genuinely surprised to see people who follow this programme piling in on Riley. Do you not remember a few months ago when some of the people associated with Rachel Riley were piling in on me, demanding that my address be published, demanding that people come and see me because I said I'm sick to effing death of listening to stories about the Holocaust, which I am? Don't be a hypocrite. You stood up for my right then to think and to say whatever the bloody hell I want to think and say. And you'll do the same for Rachel Riley, regardless of what you think about her. End of sermon. Okay. On the whole thing of deplatforming people, Brexiteer students are apparently feeling very uncomfortable in academic places. They're uncomfortable with speaking about their support for Brexit, because most universities are full of left-ish people who are Remainers. Policy Exchange, we talked about this last week, has found that only 4 in 10 students who voted for or support Brexit would be happy to talk about it with the rest of their class. Because there are consequences. Did I see something on social media today about a supermarket refusing entry to a man who is standing for the Brexit Party? Did I see something like that today? I think I did, you know. I think some guy who is a prospective candidate for the Brexit Party wearing the rosette and all of that, was turfed out of a supermarket. Now, I don't know the whole story. I don't know, maybe he was shoplifting. I don't know, right? But that's the way it's being spun. That's where we're going anyway. Now, speaking of these things, Professor Eric Kaufman is a Birkbeck University politics man. He's the professor of politics at Birkbeck University, Eric Kaufman. And he was heavily involved in the policy exchange study. We'll hear him talking about Brexiteer students in a minute. But before that, we can hear him talking about the whole spectre of deplatforming. Eric Kaufman.
Well, we have another incident of a feminist artist who has been accused of transphobia at Oxford Brookes University, who's essentially been cancelled.
And how democratic is that? We saw the story. This was early this week, wasn't it? How democratic is the decision-making process that results in that person having their booking rescinded?
Well, I don't think it's democratic at all, really. It's a set of very highly networked, radical, trans activist students and their allies who are able to network and marshal pressure on the university, and then the university has capitulated and agreed to cancel this event. So I think the majority of students and faculty are simply not involved in this.
Do you accept that universities have a responsibility to make sure that their student body isn't offended?
No, I don't. I think part of the point of the university is, in fact, to expose people to ideas which they may find offensive, and they have to learn the arguments against those ideas. So good ideas should drive out bad ideas, and protecting students from all forms of offence, or even from most forms of offence, should not be part of the university's remit.
Yes, good man. He was then asked by the Sky News presenter, is there any limit? What limits do you place on free speech?
Well, in the law, it's incitement to violence or libel, which is the boundary, and I think that's a reasonable boundary to observe. I think there are arguments, people who make the argument that emotional safety is more important than expressive and academic liberty, and I think that's a big error. And I certainly think universities should be more at the academic liberty and expressive freedom end of things than the rest of the society. It's their job to be debating ideas which may be taboo in the rest of society, not actually to be leading the way in terms of enforcing those taboos, which seems to be the case at the moment.
Good man. He then talks about the Brexit supporting students not speaking up for fear that it will have consequences.
Well, there's two separate issues. One is the no platforming, of which there are actually very relatively few incidents. But more than that, it's sort of the wider chill climate that can occur in an institution where you have a very dominant view. So if there's roughly 8 students who are Remainers for every 1 Brexiteer, and what this means is partly that it's very difficult in a classroom setting for Brexiteers to speak up. So only fewer than 4 in 10 Brexit voting or supporting students said they would be comfortable raising that viewpoint in class, compared to almost 9 in 10 Remainers being comfortable to express a Remain view. And I think that's a negative, because ultimately you want these two views to exchange. You want people to understand the other side, to bring society together and to improve dialogue.
Yeah, good man. Now on that, there's been a bit of news. And this is very important. I'm not overselling this. This is really important now. I talked this morning on the newspaper live stream about the former policeman Harry Miller, who was investigated over a limerick that he posted on Twitter, right? It was deemed to be transphobic by some activist. He was reported to the police. They spoke to him, but they didn't do anything else thereafter. But the police college recorded the incident as a hate crime. And he's gone, has Harry Miller, to the High Court today and yesterday. This is ongoing. And, drum roll please, listen up. Listen up, this is really important now, because this is good news. According to the judge hearing that case, what has happened to my little notepad there? Ah, be Jesus. Everything is frozen on me momentarily. But anyway, the judge here in this case has basically said that you do not have a right to be offended. The right to be offended does not exist. And the guy is Justice Julian Knowles, and he's hit out at police officers today, saying that they have become too quick to deem an event as a hate incident, even when no crime had in fact been committed. A person's right to be offended does not exist, says this judge, Julian Knowles, who's hitting out today at the police in general for recording such a thing, or for recording things such as hate incidents, which he is basically saying don't exist. He said, "This doesn't make sense to me. How can it be a hate incident if there is no evidence of the hate element, as in the crime? We live in a pluralistic society where none of us has a right to be offended by something that we hear. Freedom of expression laws are not there to protect statements such as kittens are cute, but they are there to protect unpleasant things. Its utility lies in exposing people to things that they do not want to hear." This is good. 21 minutes past the hour. This is damn good. And very quickly, let's run through, and I'm going to get into that again on the programme next week. Very quickly, one or two quick stories I want to cover before we get Tony on the programme, because we are going to talk about Andrew. He was pictured today, Prince Andrew, in a car coming from the palace, waving at people. I don't know who he was waving at. He went to see the Queen. He was out driving. He says that he has withdrawn from his duties. Apparently the Queen summoned him and said, "Listen, pal, no more public duties for you because of what's been happening, because of your car crash interview on Newsnight and all the rest of it." Now, Lisa Bloom is representing some of Jeffrey Epstein's victims. Here's Lisa Bloom speaking to the media this morning.
"It's great that he's stepping away from his royal duties, but it's really not about that. It's about justice and accountability for the victims. So it's important that he says he's going to cooperate with law enforcement. He should also answer questions from all of the accusers' attorneys. He should turn over any and all evidence he has, emails, texts, calendars, all the normal stuff that you turn over when you're in litigation."
Lisa Bloom, will he turn over all his materials, all of his diaries and notebooks and notepads and travel plans and all of that? Unlikely. We'll see. And finally for now, Trade Secretary Liz Truss, this is a Conservative MP, okay, Trade Secretary in the last government. She was on the BBC this lunchtime and she didn't fare very well. Back in 2014, the Conservative Party said that they would build 200,000 starter homes. Back in 2014, because young people are finding it very difficult to get on the property ladder. Tell me about it. Right? Right. Took me long enough. Right? Right. And I'm not going to get into it. Talked a lot about it. So, back in 2014, the Tories said, "We'll build 200,000 starter homes." Andrew Neil speaking to Trade Secretary Liz Truss today. Well, Andrew, he wants to know, how's it going? How are you getting on with those homes?
"You say you had a plan. You have a plan. You had a plan in 2014 to build 200,000 new starter homes. That was 5 years ago. How many did you build?"
"Well, there haven't been as many starter homes as we would have liked,
Andrew." "How many did you build?"
"I don't have the exact numbers for
you." "Well,
me.
It's easy to remember. It's zero. You built none under that plan. 200,000, zero in 5 years."
None.
"What kind of fuckery is this?"
Hang on there. Back in 2014, you said you'd build 200,000 homes for young people. Starter homes. How are you getting on? None. We built none. That bloody Jeremy Corbyn, it's his fault. Welcome to the Richie Allen Show, back in about 30 seconds' time. And Tony Gosling joins me in about 3 minutes. Don't miss Tony.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
I take the cue from certain people I know. I use the cue and then I hand it on to you. His eye, would you dare? You'd have died. I trust the views of certain people I know. They look at danger and they laugh their heads off.
I get the views of certain people I know, sings your man Morrissey on the Richie Allen Show, 27 minutes past the hour. I get the views of Tony Gosling at least once a month because he's a top man, the host of the politics show on BCFM in Bristol. It's a fantastic programme. It really is. Can't say enough about it. He's in Devon today. Would have joined us earlier on in the week, but I had a few technical issues, as you know. Great to be back today and great to be speaking with our friend Tony Gosling. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Thanks for inviting me back on again.
Love having you on. I don't know where we should start today. You and I are advocates, proponents of free speech. We probably don't like the things that Rachel Riley is saying and doing, the Countdown host, but she should have the right to say them, Tony, shouldn't she?
Well, look, I think the problem we've got is that we've had over the last 30, 40 years a concentration of news into fewer and fewer hands, fewer and fewer editors, fewer and fewer newsrooms. I mean, even on a very basic level in the UK, you've seen the ITV networks go from producing their own local documentaries all around the country to now less and less. So, I mean, for example, here in the West Country where I am, just a few years ago, they closed the whole news operation in Devon and Cornwall around Plymouth, and it's all based in Bristol. So okay, so they have, you know, reporters down here, but there's getting who controls what we see and hear, particularly in broadcasting? Is it just in fewer and fewer hands? So it's much easier to have what they call groupthink, you know. So on a particular story, you'll find just one view and that's it, and that's what you're supposed to believe. And that is not journalism. Journalism is interrogating the facts and coming up with maybe a view which does challenge what the establishment media is saying.
Brilliant stuff, Tony. This is the binary choice tactic, or the false dilemma. You're absolutely right. Just quickly, I want to talk about Andrew. You didn't answer the question. I love having you on because you didn't answer the bloody question, and I know why you didn't. Listen, I find Riley to be repugnant. I find her to be a hysterical fishwife because I don't believe that anti-Semitism is endemic in our society today. I genuinely don't believe that. However, if she wants to think that Jeremy Corbyn is anti-Semitic, we should take her to the cleaners in debate. We should not be advocating that she's fired. Do you agree
or
not?
Well, I think Boris Johnson is anti-Semitic. I saw his speech at the United Nations in front of the world where he's invoking the myth of Prometheus. Now, the myth of Prometheus is directly countering The whole Old Testament idea of the Garden of Eden is saying basically the opposite, you know, that the Bible got it wrong, and God was being really vindictive when he punished the Adam and Eve. And actually, you know, Adam and Eve did the right thing. So, I mean, what he's doing there is he's subtly undermining the whole idea of the Old Testament, and he's hoping that nobody will notice. Also, my experience is within the Conservative Party, there is much more anti-Semitism, right-wing talk and thinking than there is in the Labour Party. This is sort of, you know, chatting to Tory members in, you know, local Conservative clubs, which I do from time to time. I actually have found, you know, really anti-Semitic. I'm not going to name names about specific Conservative associations, but some saying, oh, you know, the Jews, we've got to, you know, this is what's really the problem, blah, blah. And, you know, I sit there and my eyes will roll around and I just think, well, and actually usually just try and get out of the place. I don't want to be around people who are saying those things. I've never seen that going on in the Labour Party at all. And of course, this is really all just about Israel and trying to stifle criticism of Israel, because Jeremy Corbyn is being very pro-Palestinian. He's being critical of the Israeli state. We know that there isn't any proper democracy going on there at the moment. They've had they're coming on for their third election in the space of just 8 or 9 months, and the army is running the show. So effectively, you've got military rule in Israel, and the Palestinians living in a kind of a ghetto. So Corbyn is one of the only people who's saying anything of any sense. But of course, he's being smeared as, oh, well, you know, he's anti-Semitic. He hates all Jews. Of course he doesn't. Absolute nonsense and rubbish. He's been a campaigner for anti-racism the whole of his life. Absolutely. And as almost all people I've ever met in the Labour Party have. So if this is just a smear, and it only gets any traction because the mass media just pushes it because they want a bit of clickbait. And actually, maybe they are actually themselves as corporations more sympathetic with the Israeli view than the Palestinian view. And maybe actually it's the mass media that's racist and anti-Semitic.
It might very well be. I don't see Riley as being part of any sinister Hasbara plot. I see her as somebody who's just wrong. I'll give you one more chance. You don't have to answer. I'll give you one more chance to answer. We should not be calling for people to be fired because we disagree with them, because that only ends terribly, doesn't it?
Well, this is what's happened over the last 30, 40 years. There's lots of changes have happened in the media where if you own a media company, even these days, the BBC, which is virtually owned by the City of London, if you look at all the top executives, many of them, I mean, for example, the chairs have come from City of London banks. What they want is they want a whole corporation that just echoes the views of the people who are the executives running it. They have all these managers. You know what? I'd like to see every single manager at the BBC do something on air, you know, or, you know, on camera, so we can see who these people are, because they're trying to manipulate things behind the scenes and they never actually expose themselves to any kind of scrutiny by the viewers and the listeners. I mean, particularly in radio, there's no excuse for anybody, even a manager of a radio station, not to have his own show playing old music or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, this is what they're doing nowadays, is they're a whole load of bureaucrats and managers behind the scenes trying to just make sure that the only views that are promulgated by a particular outlet, you know, network or whatever, echo the owners of that outlet. And that's just not journalism. It's not interrogative journalism, which is what I love and I try and do all the time.
Yeah, it's what you've done for years, my friend. I'll give you that. Tony Gosling is our guest. The BCFM, The Politics Show, is a must listen every week. It really is. Check out thisweek.org.uk. 26 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Lisa Bloom representing some of Jeffrey Epstein's victims. She's demanding that, they're demanding that he cooperates with the authorities in the US. We've all seen the extraordinarily bizarre interview with BBC Newsnight last week. I took from the interview that he was lying profusely, and I believe that he knows. I know I don't have to be Einstein, but I believe that he knows more about the things that Epstein was up to than maybe he would want us to know. You wrote a brilliantly challenging piece on this in The Week. You take a different view of what happened in that interview,
well,
and him, and no, I want
think,
you to
I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right. He was lying on that, but I mean, we don't know. I would suggest what's happened here is Andrew has been advised. Okay, so I mean, when I first saw that Epstein had died in jail, my immediate thoughts are, well, that's handy for Andrew.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that the royal family is involved in his death, but certainly what it does is, Andrew was due to be sucked into this live case in the US, and Epstein died. So it isn't entirely impossible. The royal family used one of my either intelligence services or whoever, MI6, somebody like that. I mean, isn't it licensed to kill to get rid of this guy who could drag the royal family into this scandal? So that's feasible. But ultimately, the thing which I think, as most people have pointed to or looked at, is these pictures of Andrew and Epstein together. And I haven't seen anybody really explaining or interrogating why is Andrew and Epstein walking around in the middle of Central Park. Now, this is after Epstein's original case, where he got a year in jail. I mean, if anyone hasn't seen it, the ABC Australian documentary, 60 Minutes, it's called Exposing Jeffrey Epstein's International Sex Trafficking Ring. I mean, and Andrew is featured in that, but it's the whole documentary is focused on what was Epstein actually up to, and Ghislaine Maxwell, what were they doing? Because these were the real criminals. Anyway, so Epstein goes to jail, although he's allowed out, I think it was like 6 days a week. He can just go out and do his thing in his office and actually possibly even be interacting with young women at the same time. But anyway, that's not the point. The point really is what was actually going on in the park. So I would suggest that Andrew had seen that that Epstein was going through this court case in the US and had gone over afterwards to see to find out, look, I mean, I've been with girls in your places and you're now on trial or whatever, you've had your court case, I want to know, do you have any pictures of me? I mean, what's going on? He's obviously nervous that he might be dragged into something, so he's gone over there. Now, I would suggest, when we've seen, anyone that's had a look at this closely enough will see that in his New York mansion, Epstein had every single room camered up.
Yeah.
So there was a special little room with loads of CCTV screens in it, and everything was took place in there has been filmed. Where, obviously, must have been a lot of film of Prince Andrew. Whether he knew this at the time when he went onto the television to do the interview, I don't know. But I would suggest someone somewhere has quite a lot of footage of Prince Andrew.
Here's a question, T. Sorry to interrupt you. Here's a question, because this is really important. Tony, why would anybody want information on him? Because he's pretty useless as an individual. Or would it be to blackmail people associated with him? So he's not up to much politically, but his family, of course, are all powerful. His mother. I wonder, would that be the reason they might have wanted to entrap him?
Okay, well, look, these blackmail operations, which Epstein was running, many people suggesting for the Israeli intelligence services. I mean, it was certainly amazing the mysterious, massive amounts of money he got from somewhere. That was part of a pattern which has been going on for many, many years. I mean, you go back to the Franklin scandal, for example. This isn't really, I think the thing to understand about it is it's nothing to do with people who have a penchant for underage sex with underage boys and girls. Is actually a blackmail operation, and that's the whole purpose of it. The Franklin scandal back in 1988, which where children were being taken from a US I don't know what they call them over there, but I think it's an elementary school, junior school. 1987, the Finders cult in Virginia, where children were involved in that as well. And in 1981, Sir Peter Hayman, who was the deputy head of MI6 in Britain, he was shown to have a load of images of and believed to have been molesting young boys. And then, of course, we had the Kinkora boys' home scandal in Northern Ireland between the 1950s and the 1970s, which certainly appears to have been a British intelligence operation to blackmail people in Northern Ireland for whatever reason. But this is a normal thing. In fact, there's a great article on the Consortium News website which just goes through some of these. This is what the intelligence services do in order to blackmail people. Now, Andrew, you're quite right. It's a bit of a twit. Why would anyone want to blackmail blackmail him. But of course, this is all about having leverage into the head of state of any country. Andrew is he's the second son of the Queen, and he has an enormous amount of influence because of that position. Now, what we've got is we've got an aging Queen she could die sometime fairly soon. I mean, she's getting on, she's mid-90s now. And when it comes to Prince Charles taking over, I mean, there's going to be a bit of a, I mean, it may not be an enormous argy-bargy, but there will be a debate, because there's a lot of people in the UK are saying, well, actually, maybe it's a skip a generation and William should take over. I think there's quite a lot of feeling in the country that Charles and Camilla aren't, you know, appropriate. And that there may be also that sort of feeling in the establishment. So this gives an enormous amount of leverage to Prince Andrew in that sort of situation. So the succession, and back in, you know, medieval times, yeah, people would be just simply fall out of the top of a castle or something, or be drowned in the moat or something, or whatever. Yeah, nowadays, it's a character assassination that happens. So I think that's essentially what's happened here, is Andrew, as someone who has, you know, enormous leverage within the British state, because of his position in the royal family, has just simply been spun out. I mean, he's had sex with a 17-year-old girl, which is actually not, it's a minor offence. His real offence, as one of my colleagues was pointing out to me, is aiding arms sales to Saudi Arabia. This is the sort of thing he should be hauled over the coals for, not this Epstein scandal. And it really should be Ghislaine Maxwell, who apparently now is hiding out in Brazil, who's in the spotlight, not Andrew. I think it's fair to say that both Virginia Giuffre, or however you pronounce it, and Prince Andrew are both victims of this sting operation. And I'm quite surprised to see, I mean, the real disaster, of course, was Andrew actually going on screen, because he shouldn't be doing that. And now he's nailed his colours to the mast. At some point in the future, maybe these pictures will come out of him in there, and, you know, he will be made to look a complete idiot. But he's been very badly advised, and possibly deliberately, in order to blacken his name. So, you know, he should have, I suppose, been a little bit more wiser to the event, and, you know, understood that maybe, as a single man, and maybe a little vulnerable to a honey trap, that he shouldn't walk straight into it.
Right, I'm not having any of this.
Which he appears to have done.
I'm not having... this is Tony Gosling, by the way, terrific journalist, great friend of mine. I'm not having any of this. This is why I love having Tony on. Tony, he spent so much time in Epstein's company. How can we credibly be asked to entertain the idea that he didn't see Epstein with girls that were under the age? I accept the point you made about Virginia Roberts, Giuffre or Giuffre, however you pronounce it, as you said. I accept that. 17. Okay, she was under the age of consent in Florida. It's not good. It's a crime. She wasn't 12 or 13 or 14. I hear that. I'm not happy about it, but I hear that. How could we be expected to believe that he did not know what was going on? Remember, Royal Protection Officers, you and I have talked about how could Prince Charles not know what Jimmy Savile was up to. I can't buy for a minute that this guy Andrew didn't know or didn't see Epstein around very young girls. Back to you.
Yes, I'm sure he did, but I think he imagined that this was never going to come out, because Epstein was being protected. We know that. Ghislaine Maxwell was being protected. I mean, when Epstein was charged, I can't remember the name of the US person in the US government who was in charge of this prosecution, but he was told, well, it's hands off. This is just intelligence parlance for, well, this is an intelligence operation, and the courts are not going to get involved. And I think that's what Andrew understood, was that the whole Epstein operation was above the law, and he wasn't going to have to worry about any sort of things that happened to do with Epstein.
You were talking about you were talking about Acosta. I think Acosta there did that to you. But hang on a second. Let me just pull you back. Let me pull you up on something. If he saw Epstein with underage girls and thought to himself, ah, well, Epstein is above the law, he's worse than Jeffrey Epstein. I've said this my entire life. As somebody who was, listen, before you jump back in, I'm not virtue signaling here. I was never subjected to sexual abuse, never. I wasn't. I was very lucky, but I was subjected to the most appalling physical abuse. And when I was going through the catharsis, Tony, when I was coming to terms in my late teens, early 20s, with the things that happened to me, do you know who I blamed worse than the people who inflicted the physical abuse on me? The bastards who knew but didn't do anything. What sort of cretin, what sort of creature is Prince Andrew if he was spending time with this guy, knowing that this guy was abusing trafficked girls? He's the worst of the worst, isn't he?
Well, I'm afraid that's human nature. Often people, when they see something awful happening, turn and walk away. But the perpetrators certainly need to be brought to justice. We've got Jean-Luc Brunel, who was one of those who was procuring girls for Ghislaine Maxwell, and Ghislaine Maxwell herself. These people have to be brought to justice. It's no good for them to hide out in far-right fascist Brazil on holiday, effectively, whilst this storm blows over and they're forgotten about. I mean, remember, I mean, they're connected with the top people in the world, Richie. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein was chums and friends with, and Ghislaine Maxwell were with, Jeff Bezos, the boss of Amazon, for example, his chum. They used to go along to various of these big top-level Amazon love-in meetings of various sorts. His island was right next to Richard Branson's island, apparently, where people like Stephen Hawking are going over there. And yet none of these people seem to have been the focus of attention as much as Andrew. Now, I can understand, obviously, Andrew as a royal is going to get that attention. But we need to, I think, look at this wider operation that's been going on, which is quite clearly a major blackmail operation, which was above the law. Epstein able to go backwards and forwards to the UK, Ghislaine Maxwell being able to see, apparently travel wherever she wants to, and I would imagine that they're not the only people who have this high, you know, this level of basically get out of jail free cards in their back pocket. Wherever they go, whatever they do, they don't seem to ever get prosecuted. And I think, you know, one of the things that I find so appalling about all of this is the people who have now pulled away from Andrew. I know there are various groups that have dropped him. One, of course, is KPMG, those wonderful auditors behind the auditing of the banks such as RBS, which caused the 2008 crash. These people have now dropped Andrew, apparently. They are appalling people themselves. Andrew should have dropped them, for goodness sake, and also Standard Chartered Bank. So we're talking about people, powerful people in the City of London saying, oh, we no longer want anything to do with Andrew. And I'm not for a minute defending what he's done. I think he's been an absolute fool. But as far as I can see, he's been absolutely hung out to dry by the establishment in this case and by the press. And also, I would suggest, you know, as I said, people inside his own office deliberately shoving him in front of the cameras so that he can be pilloried.
Yeah, there was no good to come from that interview. I do agree with that. Jean-Anne Crowley, who's a very good friend of mine, very smart journalist herself. Jean-Anne says maybe the Queen is smarter than she's given credit for. Quite Machiavellian, really, knowing that when he did the interview, he would hang himself out to dry, basically. And once that interview had aired, he put himself out there, hence the open season on his past, and the irritated royal photographers started looking through the pics of old Randy Andy. So Jean-Anne taking the point of view that it's a bit of smart business by the monarch.
One of Epstein's business partners, hardly anyone has been talking about, Ehud Barak. Former Israeli leader.
Yeah.
A company called SumEB, S-U-M-E-B. Absolutely, you know, this guy was very much in touch with some very serious, high-level people. Another thing I'd like to say, Richie, which is, I mean, we've seen everywhere paedophile, this word used. Actually, I'm not sure that's the appropriate word to use about Epstein. We're talking here about young boys and girls. Oh, I don't know about boys, but certainly girls over the age of puberty. So we're talking about 12 to 16 year olds. This is certainly child sexual abuse, but paedophilia is technically speaking, I don't want to be too, you know, sort of absolutely, 100% about this, but it's like this is about Children below the age of puberty is paedophilia, and as I understand it, this was not the type of person that Epstein was procuring at all. So this term paedophile seems to be used now wrongly about
why do you
all
think that
sex
is? Because
with underage, all sex with underage.
Well, just
boys
before,
and girls,
just
which
before,
I don't think's right.
Well, just before my audience goes for you, because they will do. no, because yeah. They will. Well, you know, you've been around a long time. People hear what they want to hear. Tony Gosling is not saying that it's not so bad if you rape a 13 or a 14 year old girl. He's not saying that. I know you're not saying that. You're making a point. Why do you think it is? There something going on? Is there a reason why that's happening, that they are equating?
Well, I just think it's bad journalism. I think, you know, that's not a term that should be used to refer to, you know, to
but it is just as bad,
sex with post-pubescent youngsters. You know, it's actually pre-pubescent, which is paedophiles. And, you know, that is a whole... I mean, it's a worse offence, I think it's fair to say. You know,
I don't agree. I don't agree that it is.
I mean, particularly to do with you know, trading, selling photographs of, you know, that sort of thing. You know, I think even I'm quite sure the police will treat them differently. You know, it's a worse offence, and it should be treated as a worse offence. But the Epstein didn't really, as far as I can see, fall into that paedophile category.
Do you know what? I don't agree that it's a worse offence. We have age of consent for a reason. If a 13 or 14 year old girl is taken out of her home and brought to an island or brought to a house for the subject of being abused, for me it's just as bad.
I mean, in some countries you can marry someone at 14
I lived in
years
Spain.
Old.
I lived in Spain for years, where until recently the age of consent was 13. But I found that to be, I'm not puritanical, but I found that to be outrageous. I don't think 14 year old girls should be having sex. I don't think 15-year-olds should have. But you know what? I'm silly because I know that 15-year-old boys and girls will have sex together. But that's okay. They're 15-year-old boys and girls. But a grown man to be with a 14-year-old girl, it's rape, Tony, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think there should be sex before marriage in an ideal world. But then that's, you know, that's an old-fashioned view, probably. Look, another aspect to the Epstein case, though, is this all this dodgy mystery money that kept appearing. I mean, you know, I mentioned the links to the Israeli state through Ehud Barak. But, I mean, that money is still sitting in a bank account, and it should be investigated. It's like, well, now he's dead, no more investigation is happening.
Yeah.
Ghislaine Maxwell's disappeared off the scene. This is no longer going to be investigated. And all that's going to happen is that some of those people who were sucked in the sort of whirlpool spiral of glamour. You know, remember, you've also got your Stephen Hawkings and people like this, you know, top level scientists were on that island, on Epstein's island. How come they aren't being hung out to dry too? I just think we need to have this, a bit better interrogated than what I've seen so far, which is just really an excuse to smear Andrew and to completely spin him out of any kind of power or credibility in the future. Basically, to totally blacken the guy's name, character assassinate him.
Yeah, and look, I can see that point, and I can understand it, particularly those of us who've followed the IICA, I always get that wrong, the independent inquiry into child sex abuse. Those of us that have followed that, the allegations about a VIP paedophile ring in Westminster, and those of us that are screaming bloody blue murder, that if it's good enough for Andrew to be hauled over the coals for his knowledge of Jeffrey Epstein, what the bloody hell is there to be said about Prince Charles, the heir to the throne, the avowed best friend of Jimmy Savile, the record-breaking paedophile? I'm not, you know, stretching the imagination here when I say, how in the name of Christ, if it's okay for Andrew to be interviewed under caution, why not Prince Charles then, Tony?
Well, I think Prince Charles has probably got more better advisors and more PR savvy. You know, he's not going to go doing interviews about Jimmy Savile, where one wonders whether Andrew is such a twit that he would go and talk about almost anything. I think he seemed to think he was going to be able to wing it, that interview with Emily Maitlis, but he didn't. Certainly didn't come across in a very convincing manner. And of course, his first statement, I don't know how much he pays his PR advisor. But the first thing to say in an interview like that absolutely has got to be, about sympathy for the survivors and the victims of Epstein and Maxwell. And that he just didn't seem to occur to him that that was an important thing to say. So, you know, anyway, I think at the end of the day, we've got to interrogate, you know, I'd like to see some British mass media journalists go over to Brazil and track Ghislaine down and find out what's happening with her and doorstep her. Maybe Roger Cook can be brought out of retirement.
Roger Cook, God be with the days. You see, you and I are about the same age. We remember Roger Cook. So tell me this. On her, she's obviously next for the hit parade, and I don't say that for a giggle. She must be. I mean, if Maxwell procured girls for Jeffrey Epstein, well, then she is beyond what we would call a material witness. She's an essential witness to crimes. She's you could argue that she's an accessory after the fact.
Well, she was one of the perpetrators.
Yeah.
Almost. Well, I mean, it's quite clear. She was one of, I mean, for example, what Virginia was saying is Ghislaine was proposing to her that she wanted to own her child, that she was going to pay her $120,000 a year as a retainer. And she was going to have a child for Ghislaine, which Ghislaine would own. In a legal agreement. And of course, one knows exactly what that child would have been used for, whatever sex it was. It certainly would not have had any kind of normal, sensible existence. And that was the trigger that led to Virginia
Antony has just dropped out there, as you can tell. Let me call him back quickly so we can finish that thought before we move on. We're coming to the end of the time with Tony anyway. Talking about Ghislaine Maxwell there, who's in South America at the moment, material witness, accessory after the fact. When it comes to her knowledge of what Jeffrey Epstein was doing, well, she was right there, front and centre, providing Epstein with girls. And Prince Andrew acknowledged, didn't he, that he spoke with her when she was in London back in the late spring, early summer this year. That was only a couple of weeks after Epstein, after another investigation or a new investigation had been opened into Epstein. This is before Epstein committed suicide, allegedly, and she was in London. Andrew met her. A lot of speculation that one of the things he wanted to do was basically to kind of suss her out as to how the land was lying, what might be said about him, what could be said about him, what she was likely to say in the event she was picked up and questioned. Right, I can't get Tony. We're just about out of time anyway. So we'll move on. He's calling me back. Are you there?
I'm here.
I was desperately trying to get you back there because we've only got about 3 minutes left anyway, just to finish right. That thought about Ghislaine Maxwell and what might happen to her, what might not happen to her.
I think she will disappear. I think, you know, the intelligence services have got the very, very easy. Give her a new identity, a new name, a new passport. You know, she'll put a wig on, whatever, disappear. And that's what they do with people like this. We're supposed to forget about her. She's not, you know, someone who's important. The same with Jean-Luc Brunel. These people are serious child sex offenders, but they are under protection. It might even be that they are quietly dispatched somewhere so they can't come back and make a fuss about it. And this, of course, is one of the main things. Anyone that's involved in these major crimes themselves has got to watch out, you know, because what happened to Jeffrey Epstein could possibly happen to Ghislaine Maxwell as well. And that's part of the dangerous game that they're playing. But, I mean, the main problem here is that with Epstein particularly, is that we had a whole load of evidence in the US, but the justice system simply didn't deliver, in the same way as the justice system in Britain has not delivered for the victims of child sexual abuse by the VIP pedophiles, and that's all been kicked into the long grass. And it didn't for the Savile generation, and it hasn't, for example, for the survivors and the victims of Grenfell Tower. That's still, there's no one has been actually prosecuted under corporate manslaughter laws or any health and safety laws or anything for that. They haven't apparently even been arrested. So, I mean, our entire judicial system needs a total overhaul, and we need to have some sort of transparency about the way these High Court judges and Supreme Court judges are appointed. That, you know, because all it seems to me that they're doing at the moment is just protecting the establishment. And, you know, if you haven't got a functioning judiciary, I'm afraid it's just a slippery slope down to potentially anything up to civil war. You know, where is this going to end? If you have increasing disharmony and proportional amounts of wealth, with, you know, more and more people having to fight like crazy just to survive, and a tiny elite, I don't know, you know, where is the country going? You have to have a justice system in that sort of situation, otherwise it really will get brutal. And we've got this crazy general election coming along. I don't know if I'm allowed to say anything about that, because you've got either 5 years of Tory and Boris, or you've got this kind of Jeremy Corbyn attitude, which is where he doesn't really quite know what he wants to do. And so the voters have really been almost checkmated by the system. So there's almost nothing that they can vote for if they want to make it for a better Britain. I mean, everyone is being apparently persuaded to vote on the Brexit issue, and it would be wonderful to get this all sorted out. But then we've got to have some social justice too. And you've got to choose between the two. Why haven't we got a party that will deliver the result of the referendum and social justice? So, you know,
I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll tell you what we'll do, because we're just about out of time now. I wanted you to come on the week of the election anyway, one or two days before the 12th. And then on the Friday, I'm going to be doing, unusually because I don't work on Friday, but I'm going to be doing a special programme in the afternoon just reflecting on the results. So I'd be inviting you to participate in that anyway, Tony. So we should do that. We're just about out of time now anyway. I've got to get ready for my next guest. Tony's programme, if you haven't heard it, and I know you have, The Politics Show, thisweek.org.uk on BCFM in Bristol, is an excellent programme. Very few programmes like it anyway.
I'll give you a little quick tip about what we're doing tomorrow.
Do it.
And that is, we're looking more at the Hitler's secretary Martin Bormann's role in the Holocaust. So we've been told that the main perpetrators were Himmler, were Eichmann and Heydrich. Actually, Bormann, this guy I've been following the last couple of years, really had an immensely important role in effectively the extermination of the rabbinic tradition right across Europe. And, you know, this was an immensely important event, which has been trivialised by these anti-Semitism smears that we've seen to do with the Labour Party. And this is, you know, this is the worst thing about this, is when this is trivialised, and that is what I've seen happening. It's just not accurate. Things like Ken Livingstone being spun out for simply stating historical facts about the agreement between the Zionists and the Nazis. So we'll be doing a bit more on the real perpetrators of the Holocaust and the real anti-Semites, you know, wiping out rabbinic Jews and the synagogue. People have been taught in the synagogues across Europe tomorrow.
Must listen as usual, mate. Thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate it, Tony. Thanks for your patience this week as well. Cheers. Tony Gosling live on the line from Devon today, thisweek.org.uk, to find out about the politics show. Sounds like a fascinating programme this week about Bormann and the Holocaust. Fascinating stuff. Right, we've got to move on. It's coming up for 2.5 minutes past the hour. Going to take the headlines very quickly. Got to do that. Got to get the headlines. This is a Thursday's Richie Allen Show, of course, live on multiple platforms around the world. RichieAllen.co.uk as well. You can keep tweeting the program. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's where you can tweet me and engage with others on, on the program, basically talking about the subjects being discussed on the program. It's over to FSN even for the headlines, back in 30 seconds.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Benji Hyer. 16 migrants have been found alive in a refrigerated lorry on a ferry heading from France to Ireland. The group of men were heard banging on the walls of the trailer. Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, has asked Queen Elizabeth II for permission to step back from royal duties, and a prominent activist and former Somali diplomat has been shot dead in the country's capital, Mogadishu.
Thanks very much, Benji. Yes, coming up for 3.5 minutes past six, it is the 21st of November 2019. I am Richie Allen. We will be joined in a couple of minutes by a friend of the programme, somebody whom I've never met, but I've gotten to know her on social media over the last few years. She's a mother living down south. She's an activist and is very interested in the efficacy and the safety of vaccines, taking a very personal interest in it. And I want to find out why. I'm fascinated by, among other things, the blowback experienced by her on social media. It's extraordinary. The attacks, the threats. Never seen anything like it. Ordinary woman with a brain who goes looking for information, not too sure about certain vaccines, quizzes doctors, quizzes scientists, sends them information, asks for their opinion, and gets absolutely pilloried for it. Why? Why? We'll find out. She's been on LBC National Radio here in the UK a couple of times. The most recent visit was last week, where they didn't give her very much time and cut her off abruptly when she wanted to go down certain avenues. Why is that? Charisse Burchett joins the programme in a few minutes' time. Well, in 2 minutes' time, in fact. So I'd better get a bloody move on. This is your Richie Allen Show.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
You can't beat a bit of the specials, you see. You see, this is my type of music. The specials on The Richie Allen Show. That's music from the specials. That's Rudy on the Richie Allen Show. The time is 7 minutes past the hour. Thursday's programme. Good to be back with you. It really is. Now, the health secretary, or at least the incumbent, his name is Matt Hancock, Conservative MP, Matt Hancock. He announced only a few weeks ago that he was taking legal advice on whether or not he could introduce the mandating of vaccines here in the UK. I'm going to take legal advice on that. And that caused, maybe not a lot of uproar. There wasn't much, really. There wasn't social media. Not much, though, in the pages of the UK's media. Interesting stuff. I've taken an interest in the safety and the usefulness of vaccines for a long time, because I present a radio programme that exists for one reason and one reason only. And that's to give a bit of time to those who challenge establishment thinking or established thinking in any field. It could be politics, it could be academia, it could be health, it could be anything, right? And I've interviewed many doctors, current GPs, former GPs, who've expressed their concern at the mandating of vaccines. But not only that, they've expressed their concern regularly about the, well, I suppose, the volume of vaccines that we are presenting children with these days, right? In the UK, you can have a dozen vaccines before you're 3 years old on to deal with a wide variety of ailments and what have you. We got the measles vaccine. We didn't get the measles vaccine. We got the polio vaccine when we were younger. That was about it. We all got measles. We all got mumps. We all got chickenpox. Now, I've noticed in recent times that there isn't a more toxic debate than the whole debate about vaccines. It seems that, particularly on social media anyway, that there's only one opinion. That is, you must be pro-vaccination. You must cheerfully, you know, accept that giving a dozen vaccines to your young child is a good thing, and you shouldn't be discussing problems with vaccines. You certainly shouldn't be asking any questions, because to do so, well, is to find yourself in a lot of trouble. Okay? My guest this hour is a friend of the show's. I had a good chat with her yesterday. The first time we ever spoke, in fact. And I've noticed the abuse, the vitriol, the hatred that she's encountered on social media for expressing one or two opinions and for asking questions. She often asks questions of doctors, some well-known, some not so well-known. And what she gets back is, well, it's a tirade of pretty rotten personal abuse, which tells its own story. Like I said, she's been on national radio talking about these things. They may have been polite with her, but they certainly didn't give her any real time and cut her off when she was in her prime. Delighted to speak again, having chatted with her yesterday, to Cherise Burchett. Cherise, thanks for coming on the programme. You're very welcome. How are you?
Okay, Richie, I'm a bit nervous, but yeah, I'm good, thank you.
You've no reason to be nervous,
it's
you know
to be
that.
Here. Thanks for inviting me on.
You're welcome, and I know you're not nervous about speaking with me, I know that. I know you're not nervous about being on the programme. You're nervous because you're nervous because you've experienced in recent years pretty outlandish personal abuse. For what I can see, and I think you know this, if I thought that you'd done anything that was wrong, or if you'd been behaving in a way that was unsavoury, I wouldn't go for you, but I'd bring it up and I'd be pretty robust in my questioning of you. But I can't find any examples. I see examples of you saying to people, well, look, there is a study that says maybe this is not healthy. There is a study, and you get absolute dog's abuse. When did this begin? When did you first take an interest in this?
Well, my son was harmed by vaccinations. He was given Prevnar and MMR on the same day. And then we just noticed over about a week that he lost his eye contact, his speech, his interaction with us, and he wanted to sit in the hallway and play with the Hoover and not really pay attention to his family anymore. And then, you know, my husband said, you know, I think he hasn't been the same since his vaccines. And I started to just go online and research, and I met thousands of other parents just saying the same thing, really. But then I went to go back and look at all the safety studies, and I was just quite sure what I found. I found that actually the safety studies just were fraudulent, really. And the fact that they only test a vaccine against another vaccine. And not being a scientist, I'm just a mum. But to me, that was immediate fraud, because that's designed to mask reactions. One vaccine I looked at, it had three babies die in each trial. Therefore, it was deemed safe. And then I just kept looking more and more and finding more and more information going back years on how utterly unsafe these vaccines are. And it's just a charade, really. It's one of the biggest lies we've ever been told.
You're a mother. Yeah, so you're a mother, and you see this reaction in your son and your husband. He notices it as well. Just remind us, what were the two vaccines you got? You said MMR, and I didn't quite catch the
MMR
other one.
And Prevnar, which is pneumococcal, I believe.
Right.
And that's one of the studies I looked at, and I was quite shocked. So.
Now, I have
and
a...
That's what put me off on this, you know, just rabbit hole of information. You just keep going and finding more and meeting more parents and then really seeing more reactions online of people talking about their children's injuries and the harm that is just being done on a daily basis to our children, and the death. You know, we are seeing lots of babies who are dying after their vaccinations, and parents are speaking up about their babies dying after vaccinations as well. And yeah, that's
basically, you know, that's what set you off. Now, like I said, I've been watching for a long time from the sidelines exchanges mm-hmm. that you've had with people on Twitter predominantly, because I've not been on Facebook for a long time.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I had a Facebook ban for 30 days, so I just thought, oh, I'm going to go on Twitter. And within a couple of days of being on Twitter, I encountered a nasty account called Dot Bastard, and he wrote, within a few days, there was a Hatchet blog wrote about me from Dot Bastard, and I initially thought, oh my goodness, what have I done? You know, I've really stirred up the hornet's nest here.
And I can't understand. Do you know what,
Charisse? I just laugh at it because I think, well, you're called Doc Bastard. Who's going to take you
for
seriously with that, you know?
But what draws me to this is I'm a reasonably intelligent bloke. And
yeah.
I look at that and I think, here's a woman. Now, I know you won't take anything I say to be patronising because it's not meant to be. Here's a woman. Mm-hmm. She's a mother. She's not an academic. She's not a scientist. She's not a doctor. No more than I am, by the way. And you don't claim to be. You're on your own. You're not representing anybody. You're not part of any movement. You're a mother who says, hang on a second, I'm a bit concerned about this. Where is all this going? The reaction against you is, to me, is absolutely breathtakingly hard to understand. It's crazy. I would understand if you were a GP or if you had retired as a GP or if you were a microbiologist working in London. But you're a single, when I say single, you are an individual woman saying, what's going on with these vaccines? And yet they come from all over the world. Some of them doctors, some of them journalists, many of them these anonymous type accounts to try and discredit you. I think I said. I think I said.
You've seen it yourself today when you've literally tweeted that you're having me on.
Made me laugh that today. Yeah, yeah.
And it's instant. You know, Charisse is this, and you know she's uneducated. She doesn't know anything. You have her on. She's weaponizing Twitter apparently. Little old
you. Now look in the absence
weaponizing Twitter.
In the absence of any of these people being here, because they never accept an invitation to come on, I'll put the questions that I would put to you if I was working for LBC Radio, but of course I'm not going to interrupt you and I'm not going to try and embarrass you. So let me ask you these questions. I've heard from many people who said that they saw a big change in the baby boy or baby girl after the vaccine. Your opponents might say, Charisse, how could you be absolutely sure that it was the vaccine that caused the personality change in your little boy? How could you know that without proper, you know, without a proper investigation? What medical steps did you take to try and figure out did the vaccine cause the change in your boy?
I asked them to, when they say, well, what proof have you got? And I say, well, what proof do you want? What proof am I supposed to be able to give you? Do you think that the people who have done this to my child are going to do tests on him and give me the answers exactly what happened? Do you think they're going to do this? You know, I can't get that proof, but I'm a mother and we know every single movement, every bowel movement, every tooth. We know what's happened to our children. We've seen it. And that's enough. You know, we know what happened to our children.
You carried them, so you know. You carried them inside you for 9 months, and you know. And nothing else happened during the time period after the vaccination. He just went home from the doctors, and he carried on as normal, and then within a few days you noticed a big change in him.
Yeah, he wouldn't give us eye contact, you know, no matter what I did, would not look at me. And it was just a very strange time. And now, I mean, he's 9 now, coming up for 10, and you know how your memory fades and you think, oh, I wish I'd taken more videos, and you know, you're just a busy mum, and this is sort of happening slowly, and yeah, you know, also going when you speak to other parents as well, and they're all saying the same thing. I mean, why would we all make this up? You know, we're not going to just make this up, are we? And we just get told, oh, you're looking for something to blame. Your child was genetically abnormal anyway, and you just can't accept your child's autistic.
Now, does anybody...
That's not the case.
Right, so people say to you, you can't just accept that your child is autistic, but they didn't see the lad pre-vaccine and then post-vaccine. There was an obvious, you believe, a very obvious change in him. Can I ask you this? It's a question you probably won't be able to answer, because I don't think anybody has ever tried to measure the numbers. What sort of volume do we think we're talking about when it comes to parents who believe that there was a major personality change in their boy or girl post the vaccination? What sort of do we have any idea how many parents are saying, yes, I saw some sort of, you know, major change in my boy or my girl?
Well, I've been online and looking into this now for years and years, and I see the same story every day on social media with different parents. So, I mean, we're talking thousands here. We're talking absolute in the thousands, I think. And that's worldwide too. Yes, I mean, like you say, it's hard to put a number on that, but, you know, the rates of autism have skyrocketed, and nobody's questioning why. We didn't have, when I was a kid, we didn't have autism. We just didn't. There wasn't any autistic children in my school. Yeah, so it's really hard to put a figure on that.
When they say, by the way, I hear from a lot of people regularly, who would agree with you, who would say,
yeah,
Richie, big, you know, my boy was put on the spectrum. I'm certain that changes began to appear in him fairly rapidly after having... Now, they would say that to me. I can't endorse that, of course, but they would say that to me. Here's a question. We'll come to Merck, and, you know, the history of Merck, and we'll come to what's happening in Ireland with Gardasil, because these are important issues as well. But on the hugely important, and of course they're being ignored by the UK press and the Irish press, completely ignored by them. Now let's just stay for a minute with Merck. The Irish Times ran a story, didn't... No, just before we do that, to go back to what your opponents would say, they would say, we didn't notice autism in people back in the day because we couldn't diagnose it. Medical... you know, advancements mean that we now understand that we can track it. There's a genome, they're telling us. We can see this now. We know what it is. It is a problem. It's not coming from the vaccines, they say. It's a genetic thing, and we know how to find it today. We didn't know how to find it 30, 40 years ago. That's what they will say. I wish they'd come on and speak to me so I could put the counterpoints to them, but they won't come on. When they say that, better medical... but, you know, advances, what do you think?
Better diagnosis. Well, you know, the massive rise in autism is not down to just better diagnosis. In fact, I think we're having worse diagnosis, to be honest, because I've got friends who've been waiting for their children to be diagnosed for years. So actually, it's not better diagnosis. I just think it's just more vaccine injury. More vaccine injured children are coming through. They're giving more and more and just adding to the schedule constantly. And they've spent millions on research, but they haven't found any genetic link they haven't found any genetic link at all.
I'm amazed, by the way.
A lot of money on it, huh?
Yeah, I'm amazed. I've just read a comment from John, who's a carpenter in Greater Manchester, in Salford. And he comes across lots of people who have autistic children and autistic young people. And he says he finds it incredibly noticeable. And I hear it all the time. You know, I've recently moved to Salford and there are a lot of children around here, a lot of people. And you bump into people in the parks. I'm very loquacious. I'm a talker. I think you're a talker too, Cherise. So we talk to people. And more often than not, I'm told that, you know, he or she is on the spectrum. And I find it incredible. How could there be so many children walking around with, you know, developmental problems, with personality issues and being put on the spectrum? I do believe there's something up. And talk about that increase in the amount of vaccines given, because when I'm 44 now, like I said, we got BCG when we were very young, and that was mostly, if I remember, about polio. Horrible injection. I still got the scars on my arm. It must have been terrible to be a child and get it. But that's all we bloody well got. But now, when they get to
maybe
five...
Maybe a sugar cube or something. Yeah, that's all we had.
That's all we had. But now they get how many?
I think they get about 72 doses. Yeah, but it's, you know, about 8 weeks, they get about 16. And yeah, it's they just keep adding more to the schedule. I think they added another one last year. I can't remember what it is. But yeah, and... 1986, when they withdrew liability from the vaccine manufacturers, they just kept adding more and more. I haven't got the exact list of what was added in what year, but yeah, they've done is add more and more, and they want to add more to the schedule.
That's an important point you make there about liability.
There is no liability if your child's harmed by a vaccination. Vaccine manufacturers are exempt from being sued if they harm your child.
Now, is that in the States or is that here in the UK as well? Because there's some interesting cases. We know that the Irish government has helped to hush up a payment, I believe by Merck, to an Irish girl who's developed narcolepsy after having the swine flu vaccine. The swine flu, in case anybody doesn't know, is one of the greatest hoaxes of the last 10 years. Nonsense.
The pandemic's vaccine, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Manufactured by Glaxo.
One of the greatest lies of all time. There was never any swine flu. And people got vaccinated. And some people got narcolepsy. And the Irish government has done some sort of deal with the manufacturer of that vaccine to pay the person involved. And they signed a non-disclosure agreement. When your opponents are piling in on you on Twitter and abusing you, Cherise, and you say, well, hang on a second, not only do we have examples of vaccines harming people, but we've got a very recent example of it with the narcolepsy scandal. How can you be so, how can you be so robust in your defence of the vaccine manufacturing companies?
Exactly. And they're very black-hearted. They don't actually ever give any sympathy or compassion to these people that have been harmed. And the UK government has admitted that they harmed 800 children with that with the pandemic vaccine. They've admitted it. I don't know if they've paid out. I don't know if the UK government has paid out any money on it yet. And this happened about 10 years ago, didn't it? I think people are still waiting.
Yeah, that's right. People are still waiting.
To be compensated. But that's 800 lives affected. Narcolepsy is a serious disability. You can't work, you can't drive. You know, living a normal life is practically impossible when you're suffering from narcolepsy. And there's no compassion from any of the outlets or any of the people discussing it. And, you know, they seal the court documents. So, you know, we should be allowed to see what was discussed in court and the evidence. You know, that should be out for the public to see. But also we see a massive media blackout on any of the vaccine injury cases and any of the vaccine harm. You know, it's a total media blackout on those sort of cases, and it shouldn't be. But I think they're scared of public reaction.
Public reaction, Before we talk about what's been going on in Ireland, because I know you follow that with great interest, let me just remind our listeners, Cherise Burchett is live on the line with us this evening. I'm glad to finally have Cherise on the programme. She's a concerned citizen journalist, I'm going to call her. I think that's what she is. She's a mother, and she's entirely independent. She's not working with anybody. She's not working for anybody. And Charisse is convinced that her son was injured by a vaccine he was given. Her family and her husband, they noticed a real serious change in the boy's behaviour and in his ability to relate to them very soon after he had the vaccine. That set her off looking to see what she can find online. You are aware, of course, because you are a smart person. They've made searching online almost like conspiracy theory, haven't they? You're not supposed to go online anymore. If you tell anybody, well, I found this out online, Charisse, they've weaponized that term, haven't they? Because now apparently if you find something online, oh, well, you must be crazy, you know, for trusting
online. You're a Google researcher. gosh, I wish I could research on Google now. You can't. You know, you put something in, it's like, vaccines are safe. Vaccines are wonderful. So, yeah, and lots of things I've saved have disappeared, and the censorship is unbelievable right now. But if you know what you're looking for, you can find the information. This is the age of information. We have it at our fingertips. It's called the internet. We can go online. We can look at safety studies. We can look at government meeting minutes where they're discussing vaccine deaths. We can meet other parents saying the same thing. You know, and it's not just parents. We have scientists too backing us. We have doctors backing us.
And this is true.
Professionals are attacked, and there's a massive pharma PR machine ready to hatchet anyone who speaks up. So if these professionals put their head above the parapet, then they are shot down. We have blogs like Skeptical Raptor. You know, if your child dies of a vaccine and you speak up about it, you will have hit pieces wrote about you. Your grieving mother, you know, for example, Evie Gail Clobe, she died this year. And her mum has been trolled horrendously and blamed for her daughter's death when we know it was the vaccinations, and they're refusing to give over the daughter's tissue samples. But the pharma PR machine is in operation.
It's massive. I want to go back to the safety studies. I've seen these documents, and look, as a guy who spent enough time as a mainstream radio producer and presenter, you know, I remember some of the horror stories about Merck, but not just about Merck, about Glaxo and the things they did. You have Merck knowingly putting a drug into a circulation called Vioxx, knowingly putting a devastatingly dangerous drug into circulation.
Oh yes,
billions.
Vioxx. 50,000 people minimum.
Vioxx, right?
50,000 people minimum. That's just an underestimate. Underestimated.
That's a conservative figure. So you have Vioxx. Then you have GlaxoSmithKline, not only in the US but in China, and in other parts of the world, being found guilty of and, you know, confessing to bribing GPs all over the world to prescribe their products to their unsuspecting patients. Mm-hmm. Tickets to the theatre, concert tickets, money, holidays. This is the thing that pisses me off when I look at your opponents. I want a bit of fair play. I don't know whether they're all safe or some are safe or some are good, some are not good. I don't know. But what I see is this toxicity. When somebody like you says, look, these companies have previous, we know this, they lie, they cheat, they rob, they burn documents, and worse than that, a lot of our listeners won't know this, Charisse, these lousy corporations, they often test their drugs in very poor parts of the world,
because they
kill people in the trials, they get away with it, because nobody cares if it happens in sub-Saharan Africa or if it happens in the Far East. These are lousy companies. And those safety studies you talked about, they're in the public domain, these problems. And when you confront your opponents on social media and say to them, listen, stop the abuse for a second, look at these reports here, look at the falsification of documents, what do you get? Because as far as I can see, you get more abuse, you don't get a conversation.
No, not really. There's no conversation to be had with these trolls. You know, they will deny anything. And you know, they have their set excuses to use for every single thing that you can put out there. You know, that's their modus operandi, is to shut down discussion and debate and to deny vaccines harm, basically. And when I see these adverts like, oh, you know, we're going to send life-saving vaccines to this country if you donate, I'm like, no, because we know what they do. They ship all of their crap. They can't sell over here because it's too dangerous or out of date or whatever. And they send it over to those countries. So they're sending the most lethal stuff over to the most poorest countries in the world.
It happened
with the Urabi. Canada had the Urabi MMR. They knew it was harming people and they knew it was causing meningitis. The British government bought that. They knew it was harming people in Canada, but we still bought it. Then we stopped using the Urabi MMR over here. Then it got shipped to Brazil. So they don't care. They really do not care about our children.
They knew that was a seriously problematic dose, and when it was shut down in country A,
and they granted Blackstone indemnity here, which means that we know it's going to harm people, but we'll let you off. You have an indemnity, Glaxo. You won't, you know, we won't hold you accountable if anyone's harmed.
And you know what? I say to your opponents right now, who will be listening to this, you can come on this programme anytime, either in the presence of Sharice Burchett or with me. But what's not going to happen is you're not going to get to ignore this stuff. You see, I'm going to ask you about this stuff. I'm going to put these factual stories to you, and you can't just dismiss. And of course, this is the reason they won't come on. This is the exact reason, because they know that a reasonably experienced presenter, and I'm at least that, I'm going to say to them, look at these stories.
Well, it would be car crash, wouldn't it? It'd be like the Prince Andrew interview.
Car crash, yeah.
Because you can't maintain the lies, you can't flow, you can't keep going and defending the indefensible. You can't do it. That's why they won't have an open debate on it. And that's why every time I try and go on live radio, they're like, oh, we're running out of time, or, oh, we've got to cut you off now. You know, that's why they can't hold a debate. But what we need, and like you say, if they're going to bring in mandates, what we need and what we should call for is a forensic meeting where we go over everything. And Matt Hancock and whoever else wants to put these up legally, we sit down and however long it takes, and we do the pros and cons, and we actually listen to the actual science, which is out there. There's hundreds of studies proving that vaccines are unsafe.
That some of them are anyway.
The ingredients of them.
Well, just before we talk about that,
if we actually knew the ingredients as parents before, do you want to inject aluminium or aborted fetal cell lines, polysorbate 80 or formaldehyde into your child today? I think most parents would say, nah.
And you know, when I've made that point in the past, they've come to me and said, these trace amounts of these ingredients are so minuscule that they don't breach the blood-brain barrier and that they're not harmful. But I always make the point, well, cumulatively, maybe they are harmful, number one. And number two, why put that shite into a baby's immune system? The baby's immune system is hardly even formed. And you're asking it to deal with this toxic nonsense when traditionally we got these ailments when we were younger. We were nursed by our mothers, you know. First of all, we used to breastfeed. We don't do that anymore with babies. I mean, which is obviously another issue entirely. But you want to put all this. So here's another question for you: the notion of vaccination, the idea that you could take the antibodies of something that's a bit nasty and give it to a person, be it a child, a man or a woman, and that might then help the body to grow an immunity against that, minus all the toxic stuff. What do you think of it as a theory in general? Because historians will tell us that vaccines, you know, particularly in the 20th century, were a gift to humanity, to civilization, and saved the lives of millions who would have otherwise died. When people say that to you, what do you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you actually do proper historical research, you'll learn that actually it was plumbing and sanitation which lessened disease rates you know, we're not having effluent running through our streets. We've got indoor bathrooms. Our hygiene is a lot better. We don't share an outdoor loo with the street kind of thing, you know. And that's how we've improved our disease rates. We're just not, you know, we've just improved how we live day to day. And but also, these viruses we're injecting into our children, that we don't magically fight them off. They have been found in living permanently in our gut flora. So, yeah, and that causes bowel disease. You know, they have been linked to bowel issues in our children. And it's, they've also been found in brain tissue. You know, children have had the MMR vaccine and developed such severe epilepsy, they've had to have half their brain removed. And that tissue sample, they found the vaccine measles strain virus in that brain tissue sample. So, no, you know, and also, like you say, the very thought of injecting something. Now, when you inject something, you are bypassing our tiered immune system. So that's our nose, our mucosa, our skin, and 70% of our immune system is in our gut. So just injecting something bypasses all of that, and you're giving the body really an assault. And especially with the materials that's actually in the vaccine, the ones that are listed. But we also know through further research that all the vaccines tested in an Italian lab that they tested were contaminated. So we have the unknown science as well, which goes with it. They're contaminated too, with all sorts of nasty things. Yeah, so I know you can't support it on any level.
I hear you on the sanitation improvements. It's a good argument, mm-hmm. and I've heard it made before. But I do understand that vaccines didn't always contain the adjuvants they contain now. I wouldn't be so quick personally, and of course you're entitled to your opinion, I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss the notion that they've played their part in eradicating disease in the past, personally. Because I think they didn't have some of the toxic stuff in them at one time that you and I have discussed in the last couple of minutes. What do you think?
Well, like we discussed earlier, we haven't given so many. So now I think we've reached a tipping point. Now our children are at this tipping point. Now we're seeing, now I'm at the school gates, I'm not seeing parents worried about measles, but I'm speaking to parents and it's, oh, have you sorted out Johnny's EHCP yet? Oh, do you know what secondary school he's going to get into? You know, because we don't know, because some of our children aren't going to cope going to mainstream secondary school, and we're told they can't go to special school. So these are the conversations I'm having on the front lines as a parent, and I do think that the tipping point has reached where we're giving so many now, it's detrimental to health. And we're seeing so many children with sensory processing issues, neurological issues, asthma, allergies. You know, I've got one friend who has to go to school to pick her child up at 10:30 because he can't cope in school. There's so many issues like this in our children, and we're not questioning why. Why is this happening?
I don't like it either, Cherise. I don't like it. I don't like
the fact. What has changed? What have we done to our children? What has changed since we were children, which is a generation or so, to now?
Why do we need so many?
What have we done differently? And the only thing that we can see is the vaccines. Now, they might operate, and there is science out there as well, that they can be synergistically toxic with glyphosate in foods and things like that. But when we look at the vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies, the unvaccinated children have the best health. They're super bright. They are super healthy. They have less neurodevelopmental delays. Less asthma, less eczema, allergies, you know. So, you know, when you consider the umbrella of evidence, it just doesn't support vaccination.
Yeah, I just want to endorse that. A number of doctors have told me, not only on this programme but outside it, that they agree that the unvaccinated children are healthier. They don't develop, you know, illnesses in their early school years. They tend to be fairly robust and tough. You preempted, by the way, my next question, because I was going to ask you, you know, ultimately how do we really know? Because food standards have declined so terribly, Charisse, in the last 25, 30, 40 years, at the same time that we've increased the schedule. And you mentioned it. And again, you know, people listening to this might say, why is she so certain that the problems with autism and behavioural conditions emanate from the increased vaccination? The food standards have gone through the floor as well. But you did mention that. But again, people might say, well, you know, we haven't done studies there either. This is, you know, your opponents will say, your nice opponents, they're not all arseholes, most of them are, but they're not all. Some of them are nice people. And they'll say, it's almost like you want to believe that it's the vaccines doing it, but you're ruling out, you know, lots of other environmental kind of possibly impacting things like food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, as I said, it's a synergistic toxicity. But, you know, when you look at the vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies that have been done, the vaccinated children's health is worse. And that's all fact. I can say, really.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, there are going to be other environmental factors possibly, but, you know, let's consider the umbrella of evidence here. We've got, you know, we've got countless studies linking aluminium to aluminium in vaccinations. Why are we injecting aluminium into babies? Why? There is no safety study proving that aluminium is safe to inject into human life. And Dr. Exley study of 2017 linked aluminium in vaccinations to autism. He crossed that Rubicon, and he only could access 5 tissue samples. So it was a very small sample, but you don't, you know, the brain tissue, obviously, because it has to come from deceased people, it's very hard to come by. So he only had 5 tissue samples, but those tissue samples were very high in aluminium, and those were of autistic people.
That's right, it's important.
You know, that's been linked by science.
That's right. That's a very important story, that. And I've been in touch. I've been in touch with the scientist mentioned, Christopher Exley. And I get
amazing man. He's a 30-year expert on aluminium, and he's come out and said we shouldn't be injecting aluminium, and we should be limiting our exposure to it
at any dose.
And another media blackout. Has that been put on the front page? No. Should we be telling parents that? Yes, we should.
That's your central kind of reason for doing what you do. Again, from what I can determine from reading your tweets, and I had a good creepy look back through your tweets there over the last 24 hours. I had a good creepy look back, like some errant employer who was looking through before I decide to give you the job or not. But yeah.
Oh dear.
No, seriously. To me, that shines through. You are saying clearly, look at what's happening here. It's real. There is genuine concern because of this study, because of what Exley has done. Why can't we talk about it? You're entitled to say that. It's coming up for 13 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got Charisse for another 9 or 10 minutes. I mean, Charisse, the Irish situation alone, I know it's happening in other parts of the world. It's very, you know, personal for me, because I've met some of the moms, and they're lovely, lovely women. They're great Irish women, you know, and they're not anti-vaxxers. They see what they believe.
They vaccinated their children.
They vaccinated their children.
I vaccinated my child. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. That term has been turned into a pharma PR hate term.
A term of abuse.
You can possibly hang on that term. Every evil has been planned to hang on that term, anti-vaxxer. You're an anti-vaxxer. No, I vaccinated my child, and you know, so we have to, I mean, if you type in anti-vaxxer on Twitter and paedophile, they compare us to paedophiles. You're worse than paedophiles. You're this, you're that, you're... I just had a tweet earlier before I came on the show. I'm plague-pushing, child-killing, cult mentality, anti-vaxxer.
But that's not a rational person. I don't understand. Who are these fucking people? Excuse my language. Who are they?
Who are these fucking people?
Yeah, that's not a rational person.
People? Do you know what I'm going to say now? Come and tweet, and I didn't mean to tweet behind my real name and face, but I'm going to say now, come and tweet me behind your real name.
Unmask yourself, yeah.
Come and tweet me now. Yeah. Change your account, put your photo up, and put your real name up, and then tweet me, and then see if you will.
Why are they so scared? Why are they so scared of one woman and one woman's determination to place in the public domain real information? Right, okay, listen, if I wanted to be a right bastard now, I would say, okay, Charisse, you do put that real information in the public domain and then you make assumptions about it. Now, you wouldn't deny that, you do. And I've no problem with that because I do the same thing. But the fact is the information is unimpeachable. These things have happened. This study by Exley is real. And what's happening in Ireland is real. Thousands of Irish girls.
Then he had his funding pulled.
Yes.
You know?
And now funding pulled. Donations now.
We're refusing for good scientists doing good, honest work, making scientific discoveries. What happens to them? Their funding gets pulled. They can't speak up. You know, they can't come and talk about their work. They're not given airtime on the TV. But they wouldn't be given half an hour on a news show, which is where they should be. This is important. These are our children. And more children will be vaccinated tomorrow. And it's just, you know, I can't stop doing this. That's sort of what drives me, really.
Well, if Exley was on television tomorrow and was given a fair go by, let's say, Victoria Derbyshire, or the programme that Matthew Wright used to present on Channel 5, or if he was interviewed by Andrew Neil on the BBC, and if they were nice and said, right, Christopher, what did you find? And they gave him a bit of time. They could argue with him, but if they gave him time, you and I both know billions of pounds would be wiped off the share prices of the vaccine manufacturers. Because people would immediately say, no effing way.
I can tell everyone listening, go onto YouTube, look at Dr. Exley's lectures, look at him talk. He is a measured, amazing scientist. He knows his stuff. You know, these are the people I listen to. I'm doing the washing up. I'm listening to Dr. Exley, doing the ironing, got YouTube on. I'm watching Dr. Exley. Or, you know, they wouldn't give a man like that the time of day on mainstream media. They just wouldn't.
Well, because the consequences would be absolutely dire for those who make these vaccinations.
Totally, yeah.
These are strange, creepy, terrifying times when we don't have a son or a daughter. I think people who listen to the programme know that. We'd like to have. I think if it happens for us, we're going to be in a lot of trouble, I think. I think we'd have to sincerely consider not spending any more time in this country. Because it won't be long. I mean, it's happened already. I've interviewed Luke Maguire, of course. I've had other people on. It's happening already where people are saying conscientiously, listen, I don't think it's the best thing for the boy to have that stuff. Because I think he should get the measles. Yeah. And you could end up then. You could end up in family court. That's where we're going now. As a danger.
Well, I have a friend who split up from a partner. And he's a very narcissistic ex. He doesn't care about the child. But he wants to get revenge on her. So he took her to court. And she had to forcibly vaccinate her child. So if it does come to court, you'll be forced to vaccinate that child to make sure, you know, you're both on the same page. Because, I mean, I just couldn't take any of mine. You know, none of mine will have another one now. And there's no going back. Once you've done this research and you know what we know, there's no going back. There's no regaining our confidence because we know what's what. We know.
I thought we'd lost you momentarily. You know. Sorry, you just dropped out just for a second, but I got that. I got what you're saying. Just before we wrap it up, it's flown by, incidentally. Thanks for coming on, by the way. I say that because I know from chatting with you on social media that you didn't have any real concern about speaking with me, but I know there are real world consequences for, you know, putting your head above the parapet and taking it on. You've decided to take them on, which I'll always be, you know, in admiration of you for doing that. A lot of people don't. They buckle under it. But you've said, no, I'll take them on. I'll stick
lose
around.
The fear. We have to lose the fear and use our voices. We have to lose the fear and we have to fight everything we've got because they're going to bring in mandates. They're talking about it. and they're going to, that will be a strip of rights. They'll come for, they'll first, they'll say it's the MMR, then they'll say, oh no, we're going to mandate them all. Then you won't be able to work if you haven't got them, or travel. Then it'll be adult mandates. And yeah, that's what we're looking at, really, I think, in the future. We can see, people like me and you can see where that's heading.
Yeah,
you know, when they come.
It's a dreadful... What I'd like everybody who's listening to this to take home, regardless of whether you vaccinate or whether you don't, regardless of what you think about vaccines, I would like everybody listening to this to take home this one fairly scary reality. We have a situation now where people who have come across real evidence of malfeasance, of corruption by the manufacturers of vaccines, and who are worried about vaccinating, are being, as Cherise said earlier on, destroyed, or people attempt to destroy them. They're being called paedophiles. They're being called worse than paedophiles. They're being called, murderers for asking questions. We have a government that wants to introduce legislation that would compel every parent in the country to stick a needle, or to have a doctor stick a needle into their baby's arms. Whatever you think about vaccines, or whether you don't think, surely you could not be in favour of that. Surely you've got to take a step back and say, how have we come to this? Why can't we have
a
rational debate?
Well, it's pure fascism, isn't it? And what will happen is, as well, that they will... They're demonising our children, the unvaccinated children. So they'll be demonised. They won't be allowed to go to school. And, you know, I'm already seeing the trolls calling our children, you know, little crotch goblins and booger monkeys. You know, that's how they're talking about our children. The idea for those trolls is to demonise us rejecting the vaccines and demonise our children. And it's just fascism all over. And that's what we're looking at, is pure medical fascism. And it's scary. It's 1984 right now we're heading into. So we all need to be fighting this, whether you're pro or anti. You know, let's just have the choice. Let's just have choice. Let's keep our choices open. And that's it, really.
Thanks for coming on. You can find Cherise on Twitter, by the way. If you look for Cherise Burchett, you'll find Cherise, but her Twitter name is at Charbrevolution. So it's at CHARBREVOLUTION, at Charb Revolution, at Charb, CHARB Revolution. That's where you'll find
it. It's a silly thing I came up with. I just thought revolution on the end of it. I'm trying to start a revolution whilst washing up.
While doing the washing up.
You know.
Well, do you know what?
A
lot of very, very successful enterprises and causes were started from far more humble beginnings now than doing the washing up, believe you me. But look, I'm glad to have chatted with you yesterday. I'm glad you came on, because I've been tweeting you and retweeting you and following you for a number of years, and just
and
a build-up of the abuse.
And I donate to Richie's show.
You do, thank you, by the way.
BBC license. I donate to your show every month. It's only £5, but if we all did that, come on. You know, let's support our independent media, giving people a voice.
It's not only £5, believe you me. That's an enormous sum of money to donate to anything on a monthly basis. I really appreciate it, and I'll follow it, because obviously it's going to escalate. We're going to see more of the banning, the deleting, the abuse in the coming weeks and months. And when
we're going to see more scares. We're going to see more scares of more diseases. We're
you think that, don't you?
So watch out on that mainstream media. Because today, after our conversation yesterday, we've already got plague in China. So watch out, guys. You know, they're feeding the fear. And that's how they sell vaccines, is via fear. They feed the fear into parents. They could die if they don't get vaccinations. So just ignore these so-called outbreaks of whatever they're saying.
Well, when the health secretary, if he is returned as health secretary, when they, you know, bring this back again in the new year, the mandating, you're more than welcome to take part in that discussion and come back on the program. You will be back on the show, no doubt. In the meantime, thanks for coming on tonight. I'm really glad you did.
Oh, thank you so much.
Not at all. And look after yourself, and we'll talk again real soon. Thanks, Cherise.
Okay. All right.
Bye
thank
for
you.
Now.
Okay. Good
Bye.
Night.
That was Cherise Burchett there, live on the line from her home. And it's at Charb, CHARB, Revolution, on Twitter. Follow her on there. Fascinating conversation, that. Really appreciate her coming on. So that's it for today's programme. Thanks to Tony Gosling for his company in the first hour. Again, thanks to Sharice there. I'll be back with you on Sunday for Sunday View, the Sunday paper newspaper review show, and a full week next week, of course, as usual, of guests on the Richie Allen radio show. Closing out the programme with Marvin Gaye and, well, one of the greatest songs of all time, a song called What's Going On. This will be on repeat very soon. It'll be on YouTube and Spotify and iTunes and Podomatic. Look after yourselves. Bye for now. Bye.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love. Don't punish me, sister, with brutality, sister. Talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister.